Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially since you're always growing and changing. Therapy is all about deepening that self-awareness, because sometimes you don't know what you really want until you talk things through. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Visit betterhelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
Hey, football fans, Baldy here. I'm doing something special for this year's NFL draft. Jason Lock and Four and myself are hosting the 2023 Odyssey NFL Draft Show. Join us on the first night of the draft, talking with local experts from our Odyssey podcast from across the country. And leading up to the draft, check out our podcast, In the Huddle. I'm going to give you some inside scoop on the best prospects for your favorite team. It all starts tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern on the free Odyssey app.
We have got a whole lot of history tonight. I do love history. Big history buff. And when it's sports, it's cool because we get to talk about an event or an occurrence or a game or a moment, a milestone that either has never happened before or hasn't happened often, hasn't happened frequently, and hasn't happened in a while. And that is the case in the NBA postseason. Man, four very distinct games, and yet, whoa, a quadruple header that captured your attention from the beginning and wouldn't quite let it go until about an hour ago. And even now we're sifting through the rubble, delivering a eulogy for a top seed who falls in the opening round for the first time in over a decade. Also, applauding the successes of two teams that move on to face each other in the second round. Maybe unlikely. Well, one for sure unlikely. The other, able to take advantage of a team that wasn't prepared for this stage. In the West, beware of the champions. We've said they're the toughest out in sports. And really their experience in the postseason, in the playoffs, has become an advantage for them against a Sacramento team that is young and doesn't have a lot of experience in these moments. The Lakers look like they might be able to close out and or at least make it competitive against the Grizzlies in their game number five, only to find out the Grizzlies have fresh legs, little youth, little extra energy, a Ja Morant who's motivated, and that's what it really came down to in this game five, is that the youth that is so highlighted for the Grizzlies as being a disadvantage because it equates to, say, immaturity, lack of leadership. Instead, it gave them energy to get up and down the court, to drive to the hoop, and ultimately to take advantage of what looked to be some tired legs for the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, coming up in, we'll call it 15 minutes-ish. We'll head to Los Angeles and talk about the series between Lakers and Grizzlies with our Lakers insider. But between now and then, we got some work to do. As I say, a number one seed falls to an eight for just the sixth time in NBA history, and it has not happened since 2012. And boy, it took overtime. It took grits. It took guts. It also took the Miami Heat continuing what is a stunning offensive performance in this first round of the playoffs. Did you know that Miami is one of the worst offensive teams in the NBA? Statistically this season, one of the worst when it comes to three-point shooting, when it comes to scoring, when it comes to offense. They rank near the bottom in every single category. But you wouldn't know it if you watch this series. against Milwaukee, not the same. And this is without Tyler Hero. And also now without Victor Oladipo. What the Heat are doing also, I think, underscores their experience. But certainly, the way that Jimmy Butler has played and the fact that Milwaukee multiple times coughed up double-figure leads. Two major issues for the Bucks. They could not hit the broadside of a barn in the fourth quarter. Do you know in the fourth quarter in overtime, they were 5 of 25 from the field. So shooting the basketball from the floor. So not free throws. That's an entirely different problem. But they were 5 of 25. That includes layups. That includes mid-range. Kind of a lost art in the NBA. Also includes three-pointers. 5 of 25. And they coughed up a big fourth quarter lead. Miami earned every inch of its four wins in this series. A tight one in overtime. Yes, Jimmy Butler deserves all the accolades and the adjectives that will be thrown at him because he had 98 points in the last two games. 98 points for Jimmy Butler in two games. Some athleticism, some toughness, both mentally and physically, tenacity. I love what Jimmy Butler brings to the table. But at the same time, the Milwaukee Bucks left the door so unbelievably wide open that a lot of teams would have made a run in that situation. Boy, it was ugly. So the abysmal shooting, it's my word for the week, the abysmal shooting of the Bucks from the floor in the fourth quarter and overtime, it's like they got tight. They got nervous. But it wasn't just that. The free throws. And this is primarily Giannis, okay? So we'll call a spade a spade. Chris Middleton was 9 for 9 from the free throw line. Drew Holiday, 6 for 8. Grayson Allen made both of the ones he took. Brooke Lopez missed one late in the game that was a big deal. But Giannis, 10 for 23 from the free throw line. He was asked about it post-game. I heard his response. His response was, sometimes you hit the shots, sometimes you don't. We had 10 days of some of the worst basketball of our entire season. The shots were not falling, and that applies to both the free throw line as well as the rest of the game. They just didn't fall tonight. Now, that's not entirely accurate. They did shoot 46% from the floor. But in the fourth quarter and overtime, they were awful. Or as Shaq has said in the past, was it Shaq? Horror awful. They were horror awful. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. My favorite part of the post game for the Milwaukee Bucks was the answer that Giannis delivered to a reporter's question of whether the Bucks season was a failure. That same reporter asked Mike Budenholzer, and then as soon as Giannis stepped into the press room, I don't know who the reporter was other than his name was Eric, but Giannis remembered him from last year when he asked the same question. The impassioned response from Giannis might be one of the best things I've heard all week, even in his disappointment, even in the frustration of squandering this opportunity. He did not take the bait. So you will definitely hear it tonight, even as we deliver the eulogy for the Bucks in their first round exit. But more attention needs to be paid to the Miami side of things. And boy, as I say, they earned every inch of these four wins against the Bucks.
Bam with the rock, bringing it up. Top of the arc. Drop coverage by Lopez. Bounce pass. Jimmy inside. Puts it up and in. 108. 103. Bam. Fires it inside to Jimmy. He puts it up and one. Jimmy gets buckets. By the way, season high 9 assists from Bam Adebayo. who's orchestrating everything. He gets it to Jimmy for three. Splash! The Butler did it! He has 38. We are tied at 111.
Oh, and from that point, they were just dialing up the insanity. Jason Jackson on the Heat Radio Network. Miami still needed a couple of pretty incredible, unlikely, nigh impossible moments to go their way. But I don't believe in luck. I think you create your own as a human. And so the Miami Heat kept pressing, kept attacking, kept forcing the issue with Milwaukee. And honestly, didn't it feel like the Bucks felt the weight of the pressure? They got tight. Miami obviously was in a position where they could play free and unencumbered, and they had the benefit, the confidence boost, of having done this in the game before. So to see them do it again, whoa, it was stunning. But I almost felt like the Bucks could hear the footsteps. They could hear the Miami Heat gaining on them. Using the race metaphor, the Milwaukee Bucks had raced out to a big lead. But down, let's say they're in the stadium now. They're in the final 400 yards, so a lap around the track. And as they're going around the track, there's no way they can't hear and see the Heat tracking them down.
He's on my ass!
Reeling them in. But yeah, the insanity. It was just beginning in the late stages of the fourth quarter.
Giannis, top of the arc. Does he have an answer? Drives in, floats it off the window, and good. This time with a foul. So the big man says, time to strap in here. Try to ignite his team. Giannis's first field goal since the 450 mark of the third quarter right there.
Good, pass the rock, bring it up the right side. Elevates for three. He got it! It's a one-point game. 8.4 to go.
Ball is up. Lopez wins it back to Giannis, but Giannis turns it over to the side almost, but it's saved by Middleton to Holiday. And Milwaukee has dodged the bullet for the time being. We got a foul going against the Heat. Giannis almost gave it away. Some way, somehow, Chris Middleton saved it from going out of bounds as he went in to the NBA TV folks on the far sideline.
Yeah, any which way but loose in those final few seconds. So the way that the Bucks finished left the door wide open for Miami. And there were a lot of open shots that were missed. And every time they would miss a shot, a little more confidence, little more of that full head of steam. And the Heat absorbed it all. Jimmy Butler for sure. It's not just Butler, but he is not afraid to have the ball in his hands. So they go through all of those kind of back and forth, stops and starts. But really, it comes down to, at the end of regulation, a moment that you might have to see to believe, but we're going to let you hear it anyway.
Gabe is stepping as far back as he can with 3-4 in his face. Jimmy to the rim. The catch, put up. It's in! He caught it and made it while he was Drake. Inbound, Giannis. It's done with regulation. We're tied at 118. For one reason only, Jim gets buckets.
Man, there were so many moments that this could have gone Milwaukee's way, but you got to credit the Heat, because every time Milwaukee gave them an opportunity down the stretch, they capitalized. So going back to that kind of wild, crazy save that we heard before with Dave Dave Kane, Jason Jackson, by the way, on Miami radio, but Dave on Bucks radio. Drew Holiday goes to the free throw line. He makes one. If he makes two, the Heat have to go for a three. But instead, because they were only down two, because Holiday hadn't capitalized on his free throw attempt, Butler is able to catch a lob pass from Gabe Vincent. And he actually catches it with both hands and then just powers it up with a half second to go. And they head into overtime. And in this case, there really was no room for doubt. It was almost as though once the Bucks couldn't close it out in the fourth quarter, the Heat had not just all the momentum, but all the confidence. And they had Jimmy Butler, who goes 17 of 33 in this one. I know he didn't shoot well from beyond the arc, nor from the free throw line, but he's all over the court all the time. 42 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and a block shot. That's what Jimmy Butler brings to the table. And now has 98 points in these back-to-back wins over Milwaukee.
My teammates, they need me to be that way right now. I will continue to be that way right now. Whatever it takes to win, it could be 40, it could be 50, it could be 0 and 12 assists. I got to be able to do it all.
Gives credit to his teammates for making sure he's in the position to succeed. On NBA TV, that's Jimmy Butler. So what about the play at the end of regulation, Eric Spoelstra, who, by the way, is the, in my opinion, the most underappreciated coach in the league.
I'll probably let him tell the story because I had a different variation of it, and he looked at me dead in the eye. We've practiced, you know, a variation of that play with a bunch of different guys, and I was going to do a different version of it, and he just said, "No, let me be that guy." And I just said, "Okay, but what if we can't get that pass?" And he said, "I'll get it. Don't worry about it."
It's kind of nice if you're Eric Spoelstra and you can rely on a Jimmy Butler who says, "Man, I got you. I'll take care of it." So the Heat become the sixth number 8 seed to topple a one, the last time in 2012. And once again, it's worth pointing out, Miami was one of the worst offensive teams in the NBA over the course of the season, having to go through the play-in tournament. I call the Heat Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You never know what you're going to get from them. So maybe in the next series, which will be against the Knicks, they revert to their regular season offensive form. But man, what a moment for Spoelstra. What a moment for Jimmy Butler, who desperately wants a championship. It finally worked the way that it was designed.
It's just been one of these seasons, for whatever reason. We've been dealing with a great deal of adversity. You know, guys in and out of the lineups and all these clutch games, close games. Having to go through the play-in, it feels like we're going, feels like this was the finish of our second round series because of that play-in. But, for whatever reason, and this is what you always hope for, all these experiences have brought this team closer together.
Sometimes it is about synergy. It is about chemistry. It is about guys who will play their hearts out, heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears, for the guys in the locker room. And we know the Miami Heat very often win ugly. They win with grit. They win with that determination. They win not because they have more talent, though they certainly have a superstar in Butler. They've got some other very talented and experienced players. But they win just because they refuse to go away. They refuse. That quality has served the Heat well. Now, could they stand to add a few more talented players? Uh-huh. Would it be easier if they didn't have two very important pieces missing? Yes. But I don't know. You watch the Heat the last couple of years, and they don't do anything the easy way. They do not. All right, coming up next, the Memphis Grizzlies didn't deliver a knockout blow, of course, but served notice that the season against the Lakers, or the series against the Lakers, is not done. And one of them makes a guarantee that the series will go seven. We'll talk about it from the Lakers' perspective straight ahead. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good to connect with you. It is our Wednesday night. Wowzers. We're making it. This time tomorrow, we're talking NFL draft. Just one NBA game tomorrow. And so football will take center stage. We'll revel in hoops and hockey and, well, Aaron Rodgers over the next 4 hours. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Gets by Gabriel again to the window. Left hand layup is good. He's fouled. He'll get one more. And it may be time to start thinking about turning the lights off in Los Angeles. Reeves back to Beasley. He'll try another one straight away. No good again. Rebound tapped by Jones. Out to Aldama. Ahead for Bain. Bain to the window. Lays it up and lays it in. 33 for Desmond Bain. Darvin Ham has seen enough. Walker peels out to the deep right wing and he's just going to dribble it out. That's the final tonight. Zeros on the clock. The Grizzlies force a game six. They take game number five, 116-99.
We had some untimely possessions where we didn't finish with a rebound. And, you know, they were able to get one, maybe two offensive rebounds in that stretch. And a team like that, they thrive off those hustle plays, getting those 50-50 balls. They got enough scoring output where, you know, you give them second and third chances at it, you know, they're going to make you pay.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of one Darvin Ham pointing to a couple of factors in what was a significant second half run by the Grizzlies. In fact, 26 points to just two for the Lakers that blew it open between the end of the third quarter and beginning of the fourth quarter. Eric Hasseltine on Grizzlies Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're pleased to welcome our friend Trevor Lane, who is a host for Lakers Nation. And when you hear Darvin Ham talk about a couple of offensive rebounds here, a moment there, it's interesting where he kind of boils it down to this particular moment or that one. It kind of felt like it was more of an avalanche, Trevor. What did you see in that second half with the run?
Yeah, it really was an avalanche. It was more than just a moment or two. It was a prolonged scoring drought from the Lakers, combined with just a scoring outburst from the Grizzlies that ultimately pretty much ended the game in the third quarter. And I know that there were moments in the fourth quarter where the Lakers kind of left their starters in, were hoping to make some sort of a comeback, but it was pretty much out of reach by the end of the third. And it was just the Lakers offense just really struggled, and the Grizzlies made some nice adjustments. They pulled Dylan Brooks out of the game in order to create a little bit more spacing. And that worked out on the offensive end, and they got red hot, and then they just rode that momentum. The home crowd was going berserk, and that's exactly what you're supposed to do at home. They were able to take all that energy and just wallop the Lakers with it and essentially ended the game right there in the third quarter.
How much of a concern is it that the Lakers aren't shooting well right now from deep, or maybe not just from three-point land, but in general, the jump shots?
Yeah, it's definitely a concern. I mean, I just actually went through pulling all the stats on this, and LeBron in particular is really struggling. He's shooting 17% from three in the series, shot 32% from three on the season, and he's taking a high volume of shots, way more than any other Laker from behind the arc. So that's a lot of points that you're leaving there just due to some poor shooting. LeBron, D'Angelo Russell hasn't shot as well as he did during the regular season. Malik Beasley, Troy Brown is shooting 10% from three. And you expect shooting percentages to go down a bit in the postseason, particularly with a good defensive team like the Grizzlies. But still, the Lakers, especially tonight, just couldn't seem to get anything to drop. That could be some heavy legs, or it could mean that we've got positive regression coming on the way, and they'll have a hot shooting game at some point. But in any event, it's not good for the Lakers right now behind the arc, particularly with a Grizzlies team that's determined to pack the paint and force the Lakers to make those outside shots.
Well, I'm glad you brought up heavy legs. I was going to ask you how tired they looked to you.
Oh, they looked exhausted, and that was what we expected. We said it after game four, after overtime of game four, the Grizzlies being a primarily younger team. And the Lakers, outside of LeBron and Anthony Davis, are a relatively young team as well. But LeBron and AD being the two main drivers for the team, we said, you know, coming into game five, it was going to be a very, very difficult task with one day off between games, coming off of an overtime game, for the Lakers to be able to match the energy that the Grizzlies are going to have in a do-or-die situation at home. So we knew that this was going to be a difficult challenge for the Lakers coming in, but they did look exhausted. LeBron looks like he doesn't have a lot of legs left, so hopefully they can try to get as much rest as they can, because a big game six is coming up on Friday. Not much time to rest between games here.
Trevor Lane is the host of Lakers Nation with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. LeBron used a word I can't use on the radio to describe how he played tonight. Was he just referring to his shooting, or is there more to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that LeBron is struggling with the lack of burst lately. We've seen that. He did have that great finish over Jaren Jackson to force overtime, and then had the finish on Dylan Brooks in game four. But those were kind of outliers. We've seen all series where when he really has to reach back and throw the fastball and push down on the gas pedal, whatever metaphor you want to use, he can do it, but he can't do it all game. He's got to really be choosy with his moments, and that's probably a foot injury situation with that tendon in his foot. So that's been a concern. The shooting, obviously, is something that you got to worry about. I think defensively he's done well. He's committed himself to rebounding, and so he's done okay there on that end of the floor. But offensively, it just seems like you're not quite getting the production that you're used to out of LeBron. And I think a lot of it is he just doesn't quite have the same explosiveness now that he's managing an active injury. So it's what we're seeing out of him right now. He's having to rely a lot more on the three-point shot. And as we talked about a minute ago, those shots are not falling, which has left him to be much more ineffective on the offensive end than what we're used to.
When there's a 26-2 run that takes place, it's not just about the shots that aren't falling. It's also about the inability to come up with some significant stops. Who's the guy or the guys that they can turn to when they need to be able to prevent a run like that and come up with some stops, maybe two or three in a row?
I mean, it's Anthony Davis, and he's been tremendous. He's been an incredible defensive player. I think he's been the best defensive player in the series. When he got pulled, the Grizzlies really went on the run and pushed their foot down on the gas pedal, which is what they're supposed to do. But Anthony Davis has been great defensively, and he's helped them out a lot in terms of making stops. But one guy can only do so much. And the Lakers have been a good defensive team post-trade deadline in general. They've been very good in that area. But they can get caught in these rotations, particularly in the non-Anthony Davis minutes we've seen in this series, where the Grizzlies are able to exploit them, where it's Rui Hachimura and LeBron James, both at 6'8", as the two biggest players on the floor for the Lakers. We saw a little bit of Wenyen Gabriel tonight, but that particular grouping, this bench unit and LeBron grouping, just seems to be really struggling to get stops and contain the Grizzlies' offense. And so it'll be interesting to see if Darvin Ham mixes things up a little bit in Game 6, if we see some adjustments, because it was a big, big problem whenever Anthony Davis was off the floor in this one.
Trevor Lane of Lakers Nation is with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. This was just the fourth loss for the Lakers in their last 17. So we know they surged to be able to get into the play-in tournament. It's kind of interesting. I heard Eric Spoelstra talking about the Heat, indicating he felt like they've won a second-round series, even though it was just officially the first round against the Bucks, because they had to come through the play-in tournament. So you're talking about a couple of older players here with the Lakers and maybe the heavy legs, but only four losses in their last 17 games. So in posting that 3-1 lead after the play-in tournament, after the surge at the end of the regular season, how close would you say they are to playing some of their best basketball of the year before tonight?
Yeah, I think they're pretty close. And especially because when you look at this Lakers team, you just everything pre-trade deadline, you almost have to just throw away. It's a completely different team. I mean, six new players coming in. They play a different style at a different pace. Their defensive schemes are a bit different as well. So This is a very different group, but they had moments where they were really surging and playing well after the trade deadline during the regular season, and I don't think they've quite looked as sharp, particularly with both LeBron and AD kind of banged up here. But I think they're pretty close. They're playing some really good basketball right now overall. When you step back and you look big picture at what they've done since the trade deadline, they've been great. So, yeah, I think that this team is, if their two stars were completely healthy, then maybe they'd be at their peak right now. But they're not that far off of it. They've got guys who are capable of making plays. They didn't quite come up where they needed to tonight in this game. But overall, I think they've been playing pretty good basketball with a few offensive miscues notwithstanding.
Since the trade deadline, Trevor, and the changes, as you point out, they did take a little time to try to find their footing. And then LeBron was hurt, right, until the end of the regular season. So they didn't have a ton of time together as a full group. But would you say that the personnel they have right now, along with this coaching staff, is closer to who they want to be moving forward, regardless of what happens in this postseason?
Yeah, it's closer to who they want to be. It's because it's closer to who they were. If we go back to 2020 when they won the championship, that type of roster construction, while there's some very, very key differences, it's not all that dissimilar from what they're going for here. Look, surround LeBron James and Anthony Davis with players who can defend and can make three-point shots, and if they can do some other things too, well, that's icing on the cake. That's kind of the concept behind the Lakers team right now, when you look at the pieces that they've added. I'm sure there's going to be some tweaks this offseason, but for a little while there, for a year and a half there, they were a big three model. Everybody else is a veteran minimum player, and off you go, and that clearly did not work for them. So now they've gone back to this older style of build that they had, and it just makes more sense. There's more guys who can step up and do things. If LeBron's having an off night, Anthony Davis, whatever, you have more depth on this team now, and I think that overall as a group, well, as you said, they didn't have a lot of time to really throw this together and build chemistry, but the pieces fit together more naturally than the previous iteration of the Lakers did. So that does help to mitigate the chemistry concerns to some degree. It'll still help them when they can get into next season and have a full training camp and all of that. But because the pieces fit together, they were able to really take off post-trade deadline.
What did you think of their rotation or the minutes for the bench tonight? I was a little surprised. I feel like Ryu Hachimura brings some great energy and also has some skill. He didn't play a ton of minutes, but he had the most off the bench. So what did you think of their rotation?
Yeah, that was a little bit of a head-scratcher with Rui. He's played really well this series on both ends of the floor. The Grizzlies did go a bit smaller, so I was looking at that too, wondering if maybe Darvin Ham just, you know, wanted to try to match up small lineup for small lineup, and I'll need to go back and look at the tape to know for sure. But Rui is also, in the past couple of games, he's kind of been on pace for like the low 20s in terms of minutes. But the bench rotation, Darvin talked about it after the game, about how he may be limiting minutes even further. And you got to think about Malik Beasley. You got to think about Troy Brown Jr., neither one of which have shot well from three in the series. Troy Brown is shooting 10% from behind the arc. Beasley shooting 10. No, it's only on, I think he has 10 attempts, so he's 1 for 10. But still, like, that's rough. For a guy who shot 38% from three on the season, that's a big, big step down. And Beasley as well has not shot well. And if he's not shooting well, he doesn't give you a whole lot else defensively, playmaking-wise, any of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a bit more Wenyen Gabriel in the rotation, if we see Rui and Dennis Schroeder and those three being the primary players off the bench, and that's about it in more of an eight-man rotation for the Lakers in Game 6, because the bench units are just not getting the job done. I mean, I go down the list, Schroeder, Beasley, and Troy Brown, minus 26, minus 20, minus 23 on the night. It was those lineups that got annihilated.
And Hachimura's was minus 18, so not a whole lot better there. Before I let you go, we want you, as well as our listeners, to hear what Desmond Bain had to say after the game.
We got to come with the right, you know, edge and the right road mentality. But, you know, I said it out there and I'll say it again. You know, we're going to be back for a Game 7 in front of the best fans in the NBA.
What is your reaction to Bain essentially guaranteeing the series is going the distance, Trevor?
Well, I mean, so far when the Grizzlies have talked, it hasn't gone so well for them. I mean, they've been really good. The whole poke and the bear thing with Dylan Brooks and all of that, like taking shots at LeBron and everything. And then when they lose, they don't want to talk to the media after the game. They've been saying, no, we're not going to talk now. I'll say this, like Desmond Bane, and I've talked to Des multiple times. He's a great guy, and I think he 100% should be confident in their ability to win game six. And if he was saying, oh, I don't know if we're going to win or not or whatever, like that's not what you expect out of him. If they go as far as guaranteeing it, though, then you risk giving the Lakers more whiteboard material to fire that team up. And that hasn't worked out well for them in the series. So if I was a Grizzlies fan, I probably wouldn't be thrilled that he's saying that. But nonetheless, at least he's feeling confident, and you know they should be. They played really well tonight. And look, game six, it may come down to whoever wins game six wins this series, because I have a hard time seeing the Lakers coming back into Memphis and getting a win in game seven. That'll be tough. So Friday's game is going to be big.
We'll see whether or not the Grizzlies' youth is a help or a hurt in game number six. So Trevor Lane on Twitter at Trevor_Lane, host of Lakers Nation, as well as the front office show. And lots of great analysis following this game five rally by the Grizzlies. Always good to catch up with you, Trevor. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Trevor joining us live from Los Angeles, and his podcast is really popular. If you're a big fan of the Lakers, or maybe you're not, you just want some extra intel, his podcast is a big time winner. Lots of earballs on it. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page too, your reaction to what we saw tonight. The Bucks are out, best record in the NBA, and only won a single game in the series against the Heat.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Has it. 8 seconds to go. Heat up two. Runs right into Jimmy. Flops. Gets it to Middleton. Back out to Allen. 2-1. He didn't get that shot off. The Miami Heat advance to the second round. They are just the 6th, 8th seed to defeat a number one seed in the 76 years of the National Basketball Association in New York. Here we come! Start spreading the news! We'll be there on Saturday night to play ball on Sunday. Amen. God bless America.
Gabe Vincent, top of the arc. Defended by Holiday. Fires up a long three. It rims in and out. Giannis with a rebound. 8 seconds left. Giannis into the front court. Races ahead. Feeds to Middleton. Crosses over. Chris feeds out to Allen. Allen's got to get a shot off. He doesn't get it off. The game is over. And so is the season for the number one seed in these NBA playoffs. The Bucks will fall in game one. Or in round one here at Fiserv Forum in overtime, 128-126. The Heat have completed the upset bid here tonight and in front of a stunned house at Fiserv Forum.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Both versions of the end of this opening series, in which an 8 topples, I could say trounces, the one seed, the team with the best record in the NBA. Giannis missing for a couple of games, but he was back for the last two, in which the Heat rallied with dramatic fourth quarter surges. First, Jason Jackson on Heat Radio, and then Dave Kane on the Bucks Radio Network. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. So you can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page if you want to react. We still have a lot more to come. The Warriors take the edge over the Kings in the crucial, pivotal, all-important Game 5. You may remember, I said this last night, but if you haven't heard it, the winner of Game 5 in a tie series goes on to advance 82.8% of the time. And so the Warriors now have the upper hand. But we're talking about this 8 seed with Jimmy Butler. 98 points in the last two games. He has been otherworldly.
I'm just in a groove. I'm in a rhythm. I've been shooting the ball an incredible amount this series. But I feel like they're all shots that I know that I can make. And my teammates keep telling me to shoot the ball more, attack. And I'm that's just what it was. But no matter what, if I'm scoring, if I'm passing, defending, rebounding, whatever it may be, we just got to win at all costs, and we did that.
A lot of guys play the game of basketball in this league. He competes to win. That's a different language. And he's desperate and urgent and maniacal and sometimes
that's true.
Psychotic about the will to try to win.
So much that Jimmy Butler and I share. A love for coffee, a love for the Backstreet Boys. We both get maniacal at times when it comes to our craft.
A killer.
I'm a huge fan. Eric Spoelstra there on his superstar. Yes, 98 points in the last two games. And here are the Heat, who fought, scratch clawed, scuffled, and at times, let's be fair, looked like they did not deserve to sniff the postseason. And yet here they are advancing to the next round against the New York Knicks, who also may be a surprise winner. But Gabe Vincent, he's the one that lobbed that ball up to the rim. Butler grabbing it, putting it in to force overtime. How about these Miami Heat taking out the Bucks?
Makes for a hell of a story.
Yeah.
Start there. It makes for a hell of a story. But, you know, this group has just been tested time and time again throughout the season. So, like I mentioned this before, but it's almost like we were meant for this. We were meant for the ups and downs. We were meant for the battles. And we're here, and it's all that stuff we went through is finally paying off.
Battle tested is most definitely a thing. It is a thing. Now, I would have told you the Bucks were also battle tested because if you remember, Giannis was in and out of the lineup in the late stages. They played a good portion of the season without Chris Middleton. I felt like Drew Holiday, his leadership was the best it's ever been. And the way that he has propelled this team at times, Bobby Portis has had some big stretches. I mean, we saw them come together in adversity. But ultimately, the version of basketball the Heat play is like street ball. It's just different. It was forged through the fire. It was forged through either you win or you go home. And that's how the last, 2 months of their season has been? Because that sense of urgency, recognizing that they had to fight for everything. And now here they fought their way to the second round. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives. And so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give Grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.